Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, February 22nd, 2014. This is episode 1059. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Scott eVest, technology-enabled clothing to carry all your gadgets. Visit scotteVest.com/twit now through February 24th to save 40% off 14 of their bestsellers. That's scotteVest.com/twit. And don't forget to use the code TWIT13 at checkout. And by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TECHGUY to receive $10 off at checkout. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my number if you want to call with a question or a comment or a suggestion. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Outside the Canada or the U.S., you just use a Skype thing and that'll work fine. You can call me there. What a story, huh? Did you hear this story about a guy named John Coom? Jan Coom, he and his family were living in Kiev, the Ukraine, where, of course, there's been a lot of violence and rioting of late. This was many years ago. He was the only child of a housewife and a construction manager who built hospitals and schools. His house in the Ukraine had no hot water. His parents were so fearful of the state, they rarely talked on the phone. When he was 16 years old, about 22 years ago, he and his mother left their father behind and emigrated to Mountain View, California. The government was anti-Semitic. They were Jewish. They got a little two-bedroom apartment. She brought a suitcase stuffed with 20 Soviet-issued notebooks because she knew he'd need school supplies in the United States, didn't want to have to buy them. She took up babysitting. Jan swept the floor of a grocery store to help make ends meet. Sadly, his mother was diagnosed with cancer. They had to live off her disability allowance. Jan learned English, spoke it well enough, but he didn't like high school. He said, in Russia, you really learn about a person, not so much in California. He was kind of a troublemaker, but he loved computers. He taught himself computer networking. He would buy manuals from a used bookstore and return them, sell them back when he was done. He joined a hacker group, one I remember well, called Woo Woo. and then went to San Jose State University and moonlighted at an accounting firm, Ernst & Young, as a security tester. He was working for Ernst & Young. We went to a small company in 1997 in Silicon Valley, a small company at the time called Yahoo. Sitting across from a Yahoo employee, one of the earliest employees, employee number 44, actually. That employee's name was Brian Acton. They became fast friends. Both of them were kind of no-nonsense types. Acton encouraged him to take a job at Yahoo. He did, and 6 months later got a job working on IT, still at San Jose State. His mother passed away some years later in the 2000. The 18-year-old, an orphan. His father had died in the Ukraine a few years earlier. Acton took him under his wing. He was the older fellow. They played ultimate frisbee and soccer together and became friends over 9 years, watching Yahoo's up and down. Acton invested in the dot-com boom, lost millions in the dot-com bust. But they still became friends. In 2007, about 7 years ago, they quit Yahoo. Took a year traveling around South America, playing ultimate frisbee. Both applied to work at Facebook, a hot company at the time. Both were turned down. Coombe was running out of money. But in 2009, he bought an iPhone. And he realized that the App Store, just 7 months old at the time, might be something that could make a guy some money. He decided that his address book was really his contact list, was the people he wanted to stay in touch with, wrote a little application that would take the phone numbers from his contact book and let him contact those people, many of them in Russia. He found a programmer in Russia on a website called rentacoder.com. And they started writing an application that would allow them to message each other and his friends. It was early on, and it crashed a lot. Coombe still had those Soviet-era notebooks, would take notes about this little application in his notebook. He said finally, after a few months of this, that it just wasn't working, was about to give up when his friend Brian Acton said, "No, you should keep doing this. You should keep doing this." The only messaging services around at the time were BlackBerry Messenger, Skype, Google Talk, a few instant messenger apps. But his little app was unique because it was the only one that allowed you to use a phone number instead of a name to contact somebody. Something happened at some point a couple of years back. Users started to grow, 250,000. Acton, who was still unemployed, said, "Let me help you out. Let's form a company together." He and Coombe worked out of a little cafe in Silicon Valley called the Red Rock Cafe, the corner of California and Bryant Streets in Mountain View. The two were often there, they say, scribbling notes, typing, programming. In October of 2007, they got five ex-Yahoo friends to invest $250,000. Eventually, they ended up getting some more support from Sequoia Capital, about $8 million, and they started growing. And by just a few months ago, they were up to almost 500 million users. And that's when the big companies started to call. Facebook offered them some serious money, $3 billion. They turned it down. Then Google offered them $10 billion. They turned it down. Finally, Mark Zuckerberg, who'd become friends with John Coombe, said, I'm going to give you $16 billion. For your little company, your 32 employees, your 500 million users. Jan Coombe signed the contract to sell his company, WhatsApp, to Facebook on the door of the welfare office that he and his mother had stood in line in to collect food stamps just 10 years earlier, becoming one of the richest people in America, worth its guest about $5 billion. The most profitable acquisition in the history of technology, dwarfing every other recent acquisition. Skype, that was just $4 billion. YouTube, just $1.6 billion, a tenth of that money. It is a deal, according to Time Magazine, of epic proportions. HP bought the entire Ross Perot's entire EDS for $17 billion. Google bought Motorola for $12 billion. $19 billion total. $16 million up front. $12 billion in Facebook stock. $4 billion in cash. Another $3 billion over a few years paid out to the founders. The largest tech acquisition of all kind for an app. For an app. It's really an amazing story. It's an amazing story. WhatsApp is now valued higher than some of the biggest companies in America. And this is a company, WhatsApp, that doesn't make much money. Maybe $500,000 last year. It's kind of an amazing story. And by the way, most of this that I just quoted comes from a really well-written article in Forbes magazine, Forbes Online, by Parmi Olsen, who did the research. Just an incredible story. WhatsApp, 19 billion with a B dollars for an app. We thought Instagram at 1 billion was a lot. Nest, Google bought for 3.2 billion, seemed like a lot. 19 billion is unheard of. It's unbelievable. It's a mind-boggling number. And of course, now the question is, what does Facebook do next? 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your call's next. $19 billion. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Have you ever used WhatsApp? Heather Hummin, have you ever used WhatsApp? A lot of people have not.
I haven't yet. But
I used it. I was using it with friends who lived overseas. It's very popular internationally. It does, my friend Alan Tepper likes it because it does diacritical marks well, which text messaging often doesn't, and other apps. There are many apps like this. BlackBerry Messenger. Downside to that, you have to have a BlackBerry, or used to. Now it's available everywhere. Kik is very popular among the kids. There's other messaging apps. Facebook bought one not so long ago called Beluga. That's what they turned into Facebook Messenger. They own this technology. They're not buying WhatsApp for what it does, because Facebook Messenger already does that. The only, I guess, big difference would be WhatsApp focuses on phone numbers, and most importantly, it's huge internationally. It's huge internationally. And that's, I think, the reason Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook were interested. It's a lot of people. There's very little way to make money with it. They say very prominently when you first sign up for WhatsApp, we don't take ads. Both John Coom and Brian Acton worked in advertising at Yahoo and hated it. And they said any company that takes advertising spends a significant amount of engineering resources on data mining, on finding out more about its users. We don't want to do that. I think it's one of the reasons users like WhatsApp, no ads. It's free for the first year, and then it's 99 cents a year to use. Even if all 450 million users, and Mark Zuckerberg, by the way, says they're going to get to a billion any minute now. So let's say they have a billion users. That's $1 billion a year if every one of them pays 99 cents, which they won't. It's $1 billion a year. It's still going to take 19 years to pay this thing back. That's not why they're doing it. The only thing I can think of, well, there's two things. First of all, it's defensive. Google apparently was bidding hard for this $10 billion at last bid, and that's some serious money. Google was unwilling to give WhatsApp a seat on the Google board. Facebook did. They went all out. So partly I think it was defensive. They were threatened by other companies getting this application, maybe making use of it. But I think that they see some revenue from it because it's so widely used outside of the U.S. that perhaps they think that it could be monetized. They could make money on it, not through advertising. I think they know they can't really do that very effectively. Then this is the big problem with something like this. The user base can trot away very quickly in days. Facebook knows this. They killed MySpace that way. So they can't really, they've got to be very careful to cultivate the existing users. Micropayments and shopping, perhaps. Adding more capabilities. But again, that's risky. Because you make something more complicated, it takes away some of the charm of it. Really, WhatsApp has 450 million users because it's a very simple, straightforwarding way to message people in your contact list, individually or in groups. You can send text, pictures, video, and audio. But Messenger does all of that too. So I'm hard-pressed to think of a reason why this makes any sense at all, except that Facebook's got the money. WhatsApp. I bet you, though, that after the news, a lot of people downloaded it. I hadn't used WhatsApp in a while, so I didn't have it installed on my phone. I immediately reinstalled it. But you'll see if you do start using it. It's just like any other messaging app. It's even like text messaging. If you use Apple Messages, it's very similar. Skype, very similar. My biggest fear is that it's going to set a new standard for how much apps an app companies cost to acquire. That's kind of unreachable for anybody but the very biggest companies. And even they might find it a little too steep for their taste. You've set the bar high, Mark Zuckerberg. Maybe that's why he did it. Maybe that's why he did it. It has to be fun for Brian and Jan, who were turned down for jobs at Facebook just a couple of years ago, to walk in the door saying, yeah. Now, how do you like me? 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 8888-ASK-LEO. What do you think? We can talk about that. Anything else on your mind? Heather Hammond is lining up phone calls as we speak. In fact, let me go to the first call of the day. Asher. Oh, it's Asher. Now, you moved. You live in Toronto now, huh, Asher? That's nice.
Yes.
It warmed up a little bit for you. You were in Nova Scotia or Newfoundland.
Yes.
Newfoundland.
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 Yes. You finally got it right.
Now that you're in Toronto, of course.
Yeah. So, after we just moved, my parents have been considering getting a new TV.
Okay.
And I've been, like, a little, the good son I am, I've been looking at TVs, and I've narrowed my choices down to two. Actually, three, but... like over here in Canada, you don't really have that many stores that sell TVs. Amazon doesn't really sell that many TVs here. And the TVs I'm looking for, I'm looking at is a LG 55 inch, 1080p, 120 hertz, 3D LED smart TV.
It's sounds like good. You know, LG makes good TVs. LED is an LCD TV with an LED backlight. I know you know that. That's what you want. The 120 hertz, I don't care about because I don't use the higher frame rates. The reason they do that is because LCD TVs can be a little slow for action and sports. And so what they do is they add frames by doubling the existing frames. That gives it a kind of a weird plasticky look, in my opinion. But some people like it. 3D, same thing. I don't like it, but you might want that. I wouldn't pay extra for 120 hertz or 3D, but I think that's a good choice, and it's a good size. Nice job.
Yeah.
What's the price?
$1,200, but I'm also looking at a different one that is a plasma.
Okay. $1,200 is a great deal, and you'll find LCDs are less expensive for this size. Which plasma are you looking at?
I'm looking at a Samsung 60-inch 1080p 600 hertz. 3D plasma smart TV. So
it's comparable. How much is that one?
Same price.
Wow. And it's bigger.
Yes.
60 inches. Well, here's the only difference. The one that you should consider is ambient lighting. Plasma, because of the reflectivity of the screens are glass and they're very reflective. You really want to watch it in a darkened room or at least be able to pull the curtains for the times when you want to look best. I think a plasma picture is better than an LCD picture, so I always get plasma. And that TV is a good TV, especially at that price. But plasma uses more power, generates more heat, and you need to darken the room. Is this going to go in the living room where you can't darken it?
It's a rental house, and it doesn't have any blinds, so we can't, unfortunately, put any blinds in.
Get the LCD.
It's going to be right in front of a window.
Get the LCD, then. It's brighter. I love plasma. Plasma is a better picture, but in this case, because you cannot darken the room, you've got bright picture windows right in front of the TV, you definitely want to get the LCD.
All right. Okay.
Get it. Hey, tell your mom and dad they're smart. They got a good kid to help them buy all this stuff. Hey, thanks, Asher. It's great to hear from you. Well, I'm glad you moved south where it's a little warmer. 8888-ASK-LEO. Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru, will help us next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Scott Wilkinson. He's our home theater guru, editor-in-chief at the AVS Forum blogs and forums. He also does a podcast for us each and every week called Home Theater Geeks. He is a home theater geek. Hi, Scott.
Indeed I am. Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. Always glad to be here.
What's up in home theater these days?
Oh, well, tons of stuff as always. Have you been watching the Olympics?
Yeah, I'm kind of bored now.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mostly watch the figure skating because there's actually there's artistry there. There's choreography and music. It's actually very good.
Cheating. It's exciting. Lying judges. It's thrilling.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
There was one very interesting skater from Spain, I think, who was wearing this outfit with thin black and white vertical stripes, and it was causing the camera and the signal fits.
Oh, they should pay attention to that.
They should.
Is that called moiré?
Precisely. That's exactly correct. It was causing moiré, which is this weird sort of wavy distortion wherever this guy was skating around. I guess it was kind of a clown outfit or something, but I was going, you really shouldn't be wearing that.
Wear a clown outfit next time, okay? Holy cow. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I've been having fun. But of course, as always, I've got questions to answer from people. By the way, you gave great advice on that last phone call.
You think that's accurate?
Absolutely.
Get the LCD if you can't control
close the curtains and you're watching during the day, then yeah, the LCD is the way to go. And I've gotten a couple of questions about 3D. Now, I know you're not a big 3D fan, but surprisingly, you know, there are a couple of questions here about active versus passive. Now, we've talked about this before. There are two kinds of 3D that you can get in a TV. One is, and both of them require glasses. One of them are active glasses that have electronics and a battery in them, and you have to make sure they're charged up. And the shutters alternately open and close in sync with showing the right eye image and the left eye image. That gives you full definition in each eye, but they're heavy, they're expensive. You know, if you have a Super Bowl party, or, you know, Super Bowl's not in 3D, but if you have some sort of party in 3D, you can't buy enough for everybody. The other kind is passive, which is the same kind you get in theaters. They just use a polarizing filter. They don't have any electronics. They're very inexpensive, don't require any batteries or anything. But they cut the vertical resolution that you see in half. So I've gotten a couple of questions about this, particularly as it regards 4K TVs, this new generation of TV with four times the number of pixels as regular, quote-unquote, HD or high-definition TV. And I much prefer passive glasses generally because they're lighter weight, they're less expensive, they're easier to deal with. And they're especially preferred on these new 4K TVs because even if you cut the vertical resolution in half, you're still seeing 1080p in each eye. So the question came from Gerald Armstrong. You know, what about this? Should I get active or passive 3D on the new 4K TVs? He notes that Samsung uses active glasses, which they do, while Sony uses passive, which is only partly true. For some reason that I've not been able to identify, Sony, the super high-end Sony 4K TVs, the 900 series and 950 series, use active glasses. But the lower-end 4K TVs, 850 series, use passive glasses. Now, normally, companies pick one of those and stick with them for their entire line. But Sony didn't for some reason. I don't really understand. Vizio went all passive in 2013, but in 2014, they dumped 3D altogether.
Wow.
So that was kind of interesting, an interesting move on Vizio's part.
Now, Vizio is a lower priced TV, and of course, passive is less expensive than active.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
So that might be a reason for
exactly. It may be.
Yeah.
Now, LG, to address the call that you just took in the previous segment, LG has always gone with passive glasses. So if that guy buys an LG 3D TV, he will get it with passive glasses, which I prefer. So
is
that was
the
another
brightness
good...
the same on active and passive?
No. Believe it or not, active glasses are even dimmer.
Oh, wow.
They let less light through than passive glasses. Passive glasses let about only 50% of the light through. Active glasses let less than that, maybe 30% of
the
light.
The other negative on active glasses is you have to charge them up because
correct.
They're active.
Or change the batteries.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine, exactly. Mine have USB charging and you plug it into the back of the TV. That's both on a Samsung and on a Pioneer.
Panasonic.
Panasonic.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
You know, that's one of the many disadvantages. You know, 4K, I've always recommended that 4K TVs, this extra high resolution, is not ready for prime time yet because there are other aspects besides the resolution that are not fully settled upon. Mm. And so, you know, it's not really worth it to get the extra resolution at the distance people sit, typically like 10 feet often, and the size that they get, even a 55-inch like that fellow was going to get, or a 60-inch, you can't see the difference in resolution between HD and Ultra HD or 4K. Mm-hmm. I just saw a great example of that. I saw the Sony 4K projector, the latest model, and my friend Tom Norton, who works at soundandvision.com, played a bit of, I forget which movie it was, The Amazing Spider-Man, in 4K, native 4K, and then also on a Blu-ray, up-converted to 4K on this projector. I couldn't see much of a difference at all. Hmm. And that was on a 96-inch wide screen, sitting at probably less than 10 feet away.
Yeah.
So that whole issue is a problem, in my opinion. The one good thing about UHD is, or 4K, is that it allows passive glasses, 3D, with full 1080p resolution in each eye. And that's a pretty big advantage if you like 3D. And these two guys that have written me apparently really want to. Richard Bixler is also asking, you know, he wants 3D. 3D looks nice, he says, but Gravity really sold him on seriously considering it. And I have to admit, Gravity in 3D is fantastic. Really amazing.
You know, I saw it in 2D. I have to rent it or something and watch it in 3D.
You know, I know that you don't particularly like 3D, but that is a prime example.
I keep trying. So if it really looks good in 3D, then
it really does. Yeah. It really does. In fact, the Oscars are coming up, I guess, next weekend, huh? I'm going to be behind the scenes down at the Dolby Theater interviewing some of the technical people on the broadcast, and I'll be writing about that on avsforum.com. So stay tuned for that later in the week when I bring back some information from behind the scenes at the Oscars.
Cool. You're going to be there actually during the event?
No, sadly not.
All right.
No, I didn't quite get that far.
Well, you know, you have to rent a tux, and it's just
you see it on TV.
It's better on TV.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It is better on TV in many ways. Yeah. Exactly. So, but I will be down there during the week. I mean, cool. Hollywood is so messed up right now. The traffic is horrible around Hollywood and Highland, where the Dolby Theater is, where the Oscars are going to be, because they're building, seating for fans to watch the people go down the red carpet and all that stuff. So I try to avoid that part of town.
Week from Sunday. Do you try to see every Oscar-nominated movie? It's a lot more these days.
Yeah, I don't. I can't. There's no way.
Are they nine of them now? There's huge number.
Something like that. And that's just for Best Picture.
Yeah.
I'm also going to be paying particular attention to the technical awards, sound mixing, sound editing, that sort of thing.
Great. Scott Wilkinson, he's editor-in-chief at avsforum.com. Watch Home Theater Geeks Monday afternoons on twit.tv or check it out at twit.tv/HTG. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Sonk.
All yours, my friend.
Ah, thank you so very much.
Here at the Tech Guy Labs, we do everything in the cloud.
Hey there, chat room. Happy to see you all on this wonderful Saturday. Species 8470 hated The Amazing Spider-Man. I must admit, I didn't see the whole movie. I mean, it looked great, what I saw, the clips I watched the other day, but I didn't actually watch the whole thing. Thank you for you saying that 3D still gives nausea, and it does to many people, and that's an unfortunate thing. I've been writing and interviewing a lot lately about glasses-free 3D from a company called Stream TV Networks. Their technology is called Ultra D, and I have an interview. My podcast a couple weeks ago was an interview with Walter Rullin, who is the inventor of this technology. Well, the developer anyway. Philips was the original inventor, but he took that and moved it forward greatly to the point where it really works without glasses. and you don't have to sit in a certain spot and lock your head in a vise. It actually works really well. And so we should see, actually, we should see those TVs in retailers this year. For mostly Chinese companies, most of whom you probably haven't heard of, Hisense, Konica, Changhong, and TCL, and Haier, but also from Toshiba. He announced on the show that Toshiba was going to make an Ultra D TV. So that's pretty cool. I'm looking forward to that really a lot because I don't like glasses either. I wear glasses, and putting any kind of glasses on is not that great. Passive or better. Argtar asks, how do you get rid of crosstalk in 3D? Well, that's the big question in 3D. The glasses do it with greater or lesser results by isolating the two images. So the TV is producing these two images, the one for the left eye, the one for the right eye, and they are the glasses only let one of those images get to the right eye or the left eye, the appropriate one. Now, in the case of active glasses, when the right eye image is on the screen, the right lens is open and the left lens is closed, and then vice versa, and they open and close back and forth like that. And the reason that active glasses are dimmer than passive glasses is that they have to actually spend some time with both lenses closed in order to prevent crosstalk. So that's why they're dimmer. Passive glasses let both images in at the same time, but one of them's polarized one way and one of them's polarized the other way. And generally, that works pretty well at avoiding crosstalk. Now, how do you avoid crosstalk with glasses-free 3D? That's a real trick. And I must admit, it's very complicated, so it's difficult to explain easily. It has to do with a physics concept called the light field. And I can't go into it that much now. I really should research it more and write about it, make sure I understand it perfectly. So I don't want to give anybody any false information. But believe me, all I know is I've seen it many times and it works. It's really quite amazing. Hey, Loquacious, so glad to see you always. Absolutely. And I wave to Sarah Jane, UK, right back. Dave asked, do I have a day job or do I make a living off internet stuff? I do have a day job, and it's working on the internet. I work at avsforum.com. I'm the director of content there, and I manage what kind of content goes up on the homepage and the editorial-type content, not the forums themselves. That's still totally user. And here we go.
Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. If you want to know how you too can make $19 billion in your spare time, just an unimaginable amount of money. It's mind-boggling. John in Van Nuys, you're next. Hi, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
John, this is John. Leo, you're talking to a dumb rock here, so you have to put up with me.
I know
absolutely nothing about computers. Here's my problem. I have an XP. People have been trying to send me a video on my email, and my PC will not take it. Also, I have a Panasonic DMC FX50, which I've tried to input video into that. It will give me a picture, but it will not do a video.
So probably the best thing to do is to download. This often happens. Video can be compressed in many different formats, many different, they call them codecs, compressor, decompressor utilities. And if you don't have the right codec for the video that's been sent to you, you won't be able to decompress it and watch it. Or, as in the case of the Panasonic, you might have the right video codec, but not the right audio codec. So, and that's why you can see but not hear the video. The easiest way to do this is download a free program I like a lot that can play back pretty much anything. It's called Video LAN Client, or VLC. You can get it from VideoLAN, VideoLAN.org. It's free. it'll play back a lot of different kinds of videos, and pretty much anything that you could get in the mail, it'll play back. Even, you know, because for instance, in the older smartphones or even dumb phones, they could record video, but they'd record them into a format that was designed to be very, very easy to play back with very little processing power. GPP, and that format is very obscure. And if you get a video like that, you really need something like VLC to play it back. Videoland.org. Now, now that we've got that out of the way, and that should fix your problem, the other problem is XP. And you cannot go online with that computer after April 8th. You cannot. I won't let you. I'll come to your house, and I'll unplug it. And that's because Microsoft, it is 15 years old, but Microsoft has decided they're going to stop updating Windows XP, which means that there will be what we call exploits, ways that bad guys can exploit your computer remotely via the internet to steal stuff, to take your computer over. I'm mostly worried about a huge number of XP machines that are unknown to their owners, co-opted by hackers to be used to, you know, do nasty things on the internet, attack other computers and so forth. So please, if you have a Windows XP machine, consider buying a new one. Or taking a newer version of Windows, putting it on there. That can be problematic because, of course, the machine's pretty old. Although, you know, in many cases, Windows 7 will run fine on an XP machine. It's the drivers that become the issue. It's not the operating system, but just the ability to run the hardware the machine has. Maybe so old that the Windows XP doesn't know about it. Or put Linux on it, which is a free operating system that will run fine on that older hardware and is still secure because it's still supported. Very dangerous. After April 8th, very dangerous to use a Windows XP machine on the internet. The other choice is just to disconnect it, not use it on the internet. It's fine at home as long as you don't go online. But, you know, those friends who are sending you movies, you know, there could be other stuff in your email that's being sent to you that's not so safe. And by the way, if you're one of those people who goes, yeah, you're gloating because you use Apple products and you're safe, those poor XP slobs. If you have an iPhone or an iPad, you better darn well update it really quickly because there is a nasty bug. Yesterday, Apple pushed out an emergency update for iOS 7.0.6. Please update your iPhone. Please update your iPad. It is as bad as it can get. That's what security researchers say. It's an SSL vulnerability. It affects, iOS and OS 10. Oh, interesting. So Apple has not, to my knowledge, released an OS 10 update yet. So, gee, that's nice. We better get that, too, as quickly as possible. iOS is updated, so do update your... I didn't realize this affected OS 10. I'm starting to read about this. It allows something called man-in-the-middle attacks due to a flaw in the way iOS and OS 10, it turns out, authenticate secure connections. It's particularly troubling that somebody could use a man-in-the-middle attack to attack your email, to intercept your credit card transactions, things like that. So, Apple did do a very quick update for iOS that apparently fixes it. And you'll want to update iOS now, and then just keep your eye peeled for OS 10 patches. I'm just checking now. I don't see one yet from Apple, but presumably one will arrive soon. Maybe it's a little trickier to do on OS 10. Great. Isn't that nice? Isn't that special? We live in a troubled world, my friends. Bad guys abound. All right. Hey, thank you for the call, John. It's probably time to get a new computer. You got a lot of use out of that one. But you have a couple months to do so. April 8th is the last day. The last update you'll get from Microsoft. And the reason I think it's fairly serious is because the bad guys know this. About 30 or 40% of all Windows computers are running XP still. The bad guys say, hey, they're rubbing their hands. That's tens of millions of computers they can take over. And they're just going to wait till April 8th, and then they're going to release a horde of exploits. That's bad. Mike in Rialto, California. You're next. I'm Mike, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I have a question regarding a desktop computer. I have an older HP computer that's got the Vista operating system on it at my home. And I've upgraded the regular hard drive in it up to a, it's got a gigabyte, a 1 terabyte, I guess, hard drive. Anyway, what I'm curious about is, as you well know, Vista is extremely slow on loading whenever you start it. And I'm kind of toying with the idea of installing an SSD drive.
You won't get any benefit on an older machine.
Okay.
So SSD drives are much, much faster than the old spinning hard drives like that terabyte drive. A terabyte, though, is going to cost you a lot, $500. They're about 50 cents a gigabyte now, which is considerably less, but still more than a spinning drive. But the real problem is on an older machine, you don't have, you want at least a SATA 2, preferably a SATA 3 connection. You have a slower SATA connection. That's how you connect that hard drive to the motherboard. You won't get the benefit because the drive is fast, but the bus is slow.
Okay.
So you should check and look at the capability of that motherboard to see if those connectors are SATA 2. They're probably not, which means you could get a faster drive, but you won't see much benefit.
So what's, you said SATA 2 or SATA 3?
Yeah. SATA, you can't saturate. The speed of the SSD is actually as fast as a SATA 3. But SATA 2, at least you see some benefit, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, I like SATA. They're so expensive that it's really, if you only see a 10% increase, it's just not worth the difference, especially because you're probably not going to get a terabyte drive. You're probably going to get a smaller drive. Get a new computer if you really want an SSD. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Or put Windows 8 on it. That's right. Yeah, no, SATA 2. That's what I said. I said, it's okay. You probably have a SATA 1 on that machine, which means you shouldn't do it. If you have a SATA 2, you'll get a little bit of an improvement. And if you have SATA 3, you really want SATA 3 for the full speed improvement. Hey, let me show you my Scotty vest, actually, as long as we're talking. I've worn Scotty vest for ever. I mean, really, I think we started our relationship with Scott started in the Screensavers days. We had fashion shows back when it was really just vests. But Scotty vest now makes all kinds of apparel, all of it with an eye towards the Scott may not want me to say this, but the geek. This isn't clothing, it's just design. And it is design, it looks gorgeous, but it's engineered. It's designed to support you in your technological lifestyle. For instance, I never go to the airport without wearing a Scotty vest because 20 to 40 pockets mean that I can hide all my stuff in my vest or my jacket. I take it off, put it through the conveyor belt. That's fine, the TSA loves that. But I don't have to, I don't have to empty my pockets and all that. It's all there. It's technology-enabled clothing, and I love it. I'm wearing a Scotty vest top. I'm wearing Scotty vest pants. I've had them for a long time. I came in wearing, I'll show you, my Scotty vest jacket.
Oh, my. Look at that. Yes.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
Yes.
This is the Alpha. I should look it up. I think this has 40 pockets.
And that, right now, that goes great together.
Doesn't that look
it
nice?
Really brings and out
look,
your color and
there's
it
pockets,
your hair.
There's pockets here. There's a pocket you can put an iPad in. There's this clear planet panel lets you control a phone through there. It's just great. And every Scotty vest, the instruction, it has a distributed instruction manual. There's one in every pocket. It's so great. I want you to, they're having a big sale right now. Yeah, you see, I'm telling you some good stuff here. If you go to scottevest.com/twit, they're taking 14 of their best-selling products and taking 40% off when you use the offer code TWIT13. Lots of stuff for women, too. I have the men's trench coat, but they have a women's trench coat. This looks like a stylish trench coat, but if you look inside, you could store an iPad in there. The nice thing is they don't look bulky when you've got all this stuff in there. They hide it well. For your trip to Tanzania, absolutely a must. I love my bamboo polo. I wear these all the time. And again, you've got a pocket for your iPhone, another pocket down here for your wallet. It is just gorgeous stuff. And 40% off right now. the performance tee. That's what you're wearing. You and I are wearing a... No, actually, we're wearing... I don't know if we're wearing the performance tee or a Q-zip. I think we're wearing the Q-zip.
That trench is amazing. I can be an international woman of mystery.
Oh, it's... Yes!
An intrigue.
The Molly jacket you would love. I wear. If you're going into the snow, the puffer jackets are great, or the Lola jacket for the ladies. So the fleece 7.0. Actually, let me go get my fleece on. This one, the fleece is soft. It's warm. It's really great. And right now, 40% off. Scott doesn't do these very often. This is his 13th anniversary sale. You only have till 9 p.m. Mountain Time on February 24th to take advantage of this. So 2 days left. Hurry. ScottyVest.com/twit. Use the offer code TWIT13. If you're listening to this after the deadline, use the offer code TWIT13 anyway. Sometimes Scott, just this is a little pro tip. Sometimes Scott extends these or, you know, does weird things. So just try it anyway. TWIT13. TWIT13. It's the 13th anniversary of the Scott E. Vest. Men's and women's trenches, the new puffer jackets, the fleece 7.0. You've got cardigans, bamboo polos, performance t-shirts, and my friends, the convertible travel pants, which I wear constantly when I travel. They're so awesome. And the Margot cargo pants for the ladies. This is all new, this lady stuff. It's great. Very, very good quality. They have lots of stuff. I wear Scotty Vest all the time. They've sold 10 million pockets. That sounds like a lot, but you know, because these things, some of these things have 40 or more pockets. I should show you my pockets. There's pockets in the pockets. Look at all these.
What an incredible meeting of form and function.
Yeah. And the thing is, you load it up, which I often do, and then when you get to the airport, you're ready to go. This thing will hold an iPad.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really awesome. Oh, this is the iPad pocket right here. I'm a big fan. So, Scott, and this is, by the way, warm, toasty, comfortable. I wore it today because it was a little chilly this morning.
It's good looking.
Isn't it?
I can't handle it.
It's tasty. 40% off. They don't do this very much. ScottyVest.com/twit. Look at that.
You look a lot sportier than you are.
I know. Sad, isn't it? It's not a jacket, it's a way of life, says MicroStamp in our chat room. It's true. It's true. I won't show you, but I almost did my pants. Pull those up. I'm wearing Scotty Vest boxers. They have a little pocket in the band there. You can store I don't know. Actually, it's good for traveling. Awesome. In fact, they have a $1,000 guarantee if you're pickpocketed while wearing your Scotty Vest. I've worn Scotty Vest. Remember we had that travel guy on who said, oh, you're going to get pickpocketed? I have never been robbed as I travel. And I travel, as you know, I travel a lot because I'm always putting my wallet and everything in the Scotty Vest. I don't ever have to worry about it.
I'm like, back up. You said there's pockets in the underwear.
Yeah.
To put your euro in and what?
Yeah, I keep my euro in my spare euros.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's where I put my euros. Thanks. You look good. Let me look at this.
It's
this
not
is
bad.
Now. By the way, the Twit stuff is not available on the store. He made this specially for us.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
So I've got a men's medium on. If that gives you an idea, I feel like it's a little,
yeah,
little body conscious.
Well, they're good about it. If the size doesn't fit, you know, you can send it back and you exchange
right,
it.
Right. Just
but
saying.
But is that comfy?
Oh God, it feels amazing.
Yeah.
It's like silk.
I only exercise in these. These are what I wear to exercise. I have like 10 of them.
I'm a little addicted already.
All right, good. ScottyVest.com/twit. Save 40% off select items. when they try to pickpocket you, you go, nope, not that one. Nope, not that pocket. Nope, not that pocket either.
I have one quick question for you.
Yes.
you were mentioning iPad and iOS 7. I'd heard that iOS 7, you know, was kind of funky, and I hadn't really updated my iPad to it at all yet. Are those problems fixed?
No. That's actually a very good question, because I don't know. I would use the 6. They'll send you a 6 patch probably if there's a problem with 6. That's a great question. Let me ask around and find out for you.
Okay.
Thanks.
I got to go right now, but I'd love to find the answer
to
that.
Okay, thanks, Scott. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk tech, computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. You know, Scott Wilkinson asked me a kind of an interesting question. He did not update to iOS 7 on his iPad or iPhone. A lot of people haven't because there have been lots of problems with iOS 7. I myself am not terribly fond of it. And, of course, we're learning about a horrific bug in iOS that was an emergency patch came out from Apple yesterday to patch 7 to 7.0.6 to fix this security issue. But now I'm concerned, and Scott pointed this out, that if you hadn't updated iOS 7, can you get an update? I am told that there will be updates for Apple TV and iOS 6 to fix this bug. It's called the SSL connection verification bug. So if you are using iOS 6, any version of iOS, check for updates. Apple, of course, usually will notify you on your device that there's an update, but do check for updates and update it if an update is offered. Apparently, this is a problem in OS X as well, but Apple has yet to push out a fix for that. So I'm waiting to see that fix come out. I would check periodically as well. Apple has not yet patched OS X. The flaw allows a bad guy to intercept what you would normally be secure traffic, SSL traffic, credit card transactions, email transactions, that kind of thing, with a man-in-the-middle attack gaining access to that nominally secure transaction. That's very dangerous. Yeah, if iOS 6 asks you to update to 7 and you have avoided that, I would continue to avoid it. That's a question. We're going to have to investigate. 9 to 5 Mac says that Apple released iOS update 7.0.6 alongside new builds for iOS 6 and Apple TV. So apparently there is going to be a fix for both Apple TV, which runs iOS, and iOS 6. No word yet of an OS 10 update. What a world. It's just bad news all around. Tom in Warren, Ohio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, hi, Leo.
How are you?
I'm working now. I'm real busy.
All right. What do you do?
Make cars.
You make toilets?
Oh, cars. C-A-R-S.
Oh, cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, Warren, what kind of cars you make?
Chevrolet Cruises.
Oh, that's awesome. They're made in Warren, huh?
Lordstown, which is just south of Warren.
That's awesome. Well, if you're on the line right now, I don't want to interrupt anything. I don't want to see a cruise pop out without a steering wheel or something.
I'm trying to get my Bluetooth on.
Are you actually on the assembly line right now?
You got it.
Well, what can I do? What can I do? What parts are you putting in today?
Making doors. I got to run. Can you explain how to change your DNS on a Mac?
I can. Go do the door. We don't want a cruise to pop off the assembly line missing a door because you were talking to the tech guy. So, Keith. that's awesome. That's awesome. All right. Hold on. Let's see, Tom. So you want to change the DNS. So let me explain what DNS is. It's the domain name system. Every computer that goes on the internet has to have access to a domain name server. It's basically the phone book for the internet. When you enter in an address, usually you'll write an address in English, yahoo.com. But that's not the thing that you need any more than Leo Laporte is the thing you need to telephone me. In order to telephone me, you need my phone number. In order to reach yahoo.com or any other website, you need its IP address, its internet protocol address. All IP addresses look the same. You've seen them before. They're called sometimes a dotted quad because it's four numbers from 0 to 255 separated by periods. 192.168.1.1, that's one. So your computer, when it goes online, your browser, when it goes online, you're going to give it yahoo.com. It then has to go to a domain name server and say, what is the phone number? What's the IP address for yahoo.com? That's the DNS. DNS is configured on a Macintosh in the network settings. So when you are looking at your network settings, you'll see it, it looks like it's hard-coded in DNS server, and it'll be a number. Usually that number is your internet service provider's DNS server. So if you're on Comcast or Time Warner or DSL Extreme or AT&T, any of your internet service providers, they run DNS servers. The process actually is a little more complicated than that because first the browser queries the computer, says, you got anything in memory for yahoo.com? Because very often you've been there recently, so the computer can cache DNS addresses and say, oh, yeah, I know that address. If it's not there, it also asks the computer, do you have a file, a host's file, where that information is? If the computer says, no, no, you haven't been there recently and I don't have any other address, then the computer will query your router. Your router has information. And if the router doesn't know it, then it will query your internet service provider. If the internet service provider doesn't know it, it will query its internet service provider all the way up to the 13 top-level domain name servers. There are 13 of them spread around the world. Those are the servers that maintain the copy, the original, I should say, of the phone book. And they propagate it out to the internet service providers. But how do you change it? Because if you look at the internet settings, it's grayed out. You know, obviously, it's that advanced button right there. You'll see a DNS tab. And you can add DNS servers. The default server will be your internet service provider. But if you just press the plus button, you could put in your own. In fact, I recommend you do this, not so much on the computer, although you can. I like to do it on the router. And I like to use something called OpenDNS instead of my internet service provider's DNS server. Partly because OpenDNS is faster, but also OpenDNS can allow me to do some things like block sites. I don't want my kids to see things like that. It's also more secure in many cases than your internet service provider. If you go to opendns.com, it's free. You can they'll tell you how to do this. They have little tutorials on how to modify your router and how to modify your Mac or your PC or anything else. But in all cases, it's in the network settings. Remember, though, on the Mac, you have to change it for every interface. So if you have Wi-Fi plus Ethernet, you have to change it for each. Actually, that's a nice feature because it means you can use different DNS servers for different systems. That's why I change it in the router. If you change it in the router, it changes it globally to the entire home network. Tom, I hope that helps. Those are good looking. I like those cruises. Wait a minute. Oh, don't miss that. Put that door on there. Okay. Nice job, Tom. Well done. Esteban, Victorville, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
During the holiday, my camera shattered.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but it was a film camera, and I really don't know much about digital cameras.
It's a good time to move on.
Yeah, and I wanted to see a recommendation. My budget is around $500. I have like a $150 gift card to Best Buy.
Great. That's a good budget.
Yeah, I wanted to see what you recommend. I went to Best Buy to kind of look at the cameras, and I just didn't know what I was doing. I saw the ones on display for Samsung and the Nikons and stuff.
Tell me what kind of film camera you have. How serious are you as a photographer?
It wasn't serious. It was I used a lot of black and white film. I took pictures of my family members, maybe something random. It was just more of something fun to do to kind of not waste time, but express myself a little bit. It's more of a fun thing.
Yeah, it's a hobby. Well, hang on. We got to take a break, but when we come back, I'll help you buy some gear. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's right. Padre did this on Know How. I will when I come back, I'll mention it. Keep it simple. Oh, wow.
The lead designer, front designer.
Oh, that's beautiful. Golly, let's get him on.
Hartmut Esslinger, founder of Frog Design. Keep it simple. And then here is him. He is saying, nobody can copy the genius of Steve Jobs, but like him, we can strive for lifelong learning, respect creativity as an economic und cultural power und be courageous about fundamental change. This is beautiful. Wow. These are mock-ups. Yeah, these are concepts. They're made out of styrofoam. Wow, these are beautiful. What a nice book. Where'd you find it? Very nice. We should get Hartmut on the triangulation.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
He probably talks better than me. Probably speaks like this. Leah, why are you mocking my accent? I don't speak like that. The code for 40% off on the Scott E. Vest is TWIT13. TWIT13. Yeah. Modular Mac. Oh, my goodness. That's lovely.
The next couple pages have...
Wow. Wow, that is beautiful. Oh, a Mac phone? A Mac filing storage system?
You have a...
That's so cool. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. That's something they're kind of that Motorola was looking at for their phone. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. Yeah, I am a Bond villain. I was watching last night, we were watching Skyfall, and we agree that Javier Bardem is the best villain ever. He's such an evil villain.
Yes, I'm speaking like the Queen. I'm trying to perfect my posh accent.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We are talking about buying a camera for Esteban. He's in Victorville. His film camera broke. I shouldn't laugh. His film camera. I was just talking to a high schooler here in Petaluma, our little town. And in Petaluma High, they teach film photography. Darkroom, enlarger, all of that. One of the nice things about digital photography is you can shoot a picture, and it can be black and white, it could be color, it can be a sepia, anything you want in post-processing. It's very easy to do. Mm-hmm. The question for me and for you is, do you want a simple point-and-shoot camera with a built-in lens and built-in zoom, or do you think you might get more serious about this down the road, in which case you might want one with interchangeable lenses?
Well, the camera I had was a hand-me-down, but it did have an interchangeable lens.
Yeah, yeah.
I never changed it out because I only had one.
You have to buy more lenses to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, but I've had point-and-shoots, and it's just the picture doesn't come out as nice as I would want it to. And while I was playing with the digital cameras at the store, I saw that some of the cameras that do have the removable lens take some really nice pictures.
Oh, yeah. They're much, much better pictures. Partly because they have much, much bigger sensors. In fact, mostly because they have much, much bigger sensors. The interchangeable lens isn't the key on this. It's the size of the sensor. So I'll give you a couple of choices. I use a Sony RX100 camera. That's a point-and-shoot. That is not interchangeable lenses. But one of the advantages, and it's right in your budget, it's about $500, $550. One of the advantages of it is, like all point and shoots, has a built-in flash. It's got zoom, you know, it's more compact. But it has a large sensor. It has a 1-inch sensor, which is probably the biggest sensor on any point and shoot. And the big sensor makes a difference for a couple of reasons. First of all, a big sensor is going to give you more detail, more accurate photography. It also lets in more light. If you think about it, a little quarter-inch sensor is not going to gather as much light as a 1-inch sensor. So the larger sensor means it works better in darker situations. And much of what we do, if you're indoors, that's considered a low-light situation. It's only outdoors, it's not. So much of what we do is done indoors. So a low-light camera is probably a good idea. So I would, if you're looking at a point-and-shoot, I'd look at the Sony RX100. It's a pricey point and shoot, but it's very, very good quality. And then if you're interested perhaps in a interchangeable lens camera, the Canons are very good. The EOS Rebels, the T5 is the current, but they can usually stock older ones and they're less expensive. And then I don't want to give you only a Sony answer, but I like the Sony NEX cameras. They can be very expensive, but they have very nice... something like the NEX5 would probably be in your price point. And they're really interchangeable lenses, really good quality
cameras using the Micro Four Thirds system, which has a very big sensor, relatively big sensor. So the sensor sizes go Micro Four Thirds, you know, the quarter-inch sensors, which are on point-and-shoots, the Micro Four Thirds, which is a little bit bigger. Bigger than that is APS-C. If you can afford a camera with an APS-C sensor, that's you're going to love it. That would be like the Nikon 3200, something like that. And then if you can afford even more, the full-frame sensors are going to give you the best results. The pros use the full-frame sensors. Some people say the Sony A6000, the NX1000, the T3i, these are all good good quality cameras, entry-level for people who are serious hobbyists.
Yeah. Well, like in my family, everybody knows me as the guy that's always taking pictures, even though when they don't want them to take pictures.
Perfect. That's you, then.
I love taking pictures of my family.
Esteban, it sounds like you love photography. You could get more serious about it. It's probably good to stretch a little bit and get the best camera you can get. I would get an interchangeable lens camera because I think you may find that this is more than a hobby as time goes by, that you get more and more into it. If you're the guy who's taking pictures in the family, go for it. It's a great hobby. I think the Canon Rebels are great. Any Rebel that you can afford, those are great. They're really good entry-level cameras.
Well, it's funny because the way I broke my old camera was me and my girlfriend were stuck on Space Mountain at Disneyland.
Oh, no.
The lights came on, and it's like the Space Mountain on the inside with the lights on looks so much different.
Oh, man.
As I was pulling my camera out, my girlfriend was kind of nudging me to look in a certain direction, and boom, I'd slipped and all the way down.
Oh my goodness. Well, I'm glad you're okay. Holy cow.
We're like sitting there.
But the camera's not, yeah.
Yeah, the camera just went.
Oh, wouldn't that have been great to get those pictures?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I think you need a good camera. I'm thinking that Esteban, I feel like this is American Idol. Esteban, you've got potential. I think you really need to get out there and try a great camera because I think you're going to get great shots.
Cool.
And shop around on the price because camera prices vary a lot. You know, you could check online. You could check at Best Buy, a local camera store. If you find a camera you like, get the online price at Amazon, then go to the local camera store, see if they'll meet it. It's nice to have a local store where the guy or gal can help you, can teach you some stuff, and so forth. Somebody in the chat room saying, CNET's got a good review of digital cameras. We'll put that certainly in the show notes. There's lots of reviews online. There's a wonderful site, dpreview.com, digitalphotographyreview.com. I read their reviews religiously. There's some really good camera review sites. It's a good idea to read as many reviews as you can. There's so many choices. But it's such a great hobby. I highly encourage you. Ben in Oxnard, California is next. Hi, Ben. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I still have a Windows XP machine. And I was wondering, if I download this Ubuntu, what do I do with my existing system? Do I have to delete Windows or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, you're listening to everybody, including myself, saying, watch out, April 8th. You're going to be vulnerable if you go online with an XP machine. You know, you can stay with Windows. You might want to check. Windows 7 is as fast as XP and should be runnable on an XP machine. So you might look at upgrading to a Windows 7 or even Windows 8 if you can find it. The problem with going to Linux is it's not Windows. None of your apps will work. You know, you'll have to get new applications and so forth. Are you anxious to try Linux, or is it just because you want to keep this machine going?
Well, it's been a good machine. You know, of course, I've had it for several years.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem. Computers don't really wear out. I mean, the hard drives maybe, but everything else is going to go forever.
Yeah.
After a while, I understand why Microsoft, after 15 years, doesn't really want to support an older operating system. But the machines are perfectly good. So either get a newer version of Windows. Windows 7 should run fine on that. And you can get it fairly cheaply if you go to Newegg or places like that.
Yeah. There's only 1 megabyte of RAM.
Yeah. That's not a lot, is it?
No.
Yeah. Even Ubuntu's not going to run in 1 meg. You're going to want to get Xubuntu, which is also...
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I said 1. I think it's 4 megabytes.
4 megabytes? Gigabytes.
That must
hope it's not megabytes. If it's 4 megabytes, you need a new machine. I think 4 gigs is what you mean. Yeah, 4 is enough. 4 is fine. You can run Windows 7 just fine in that. You should be able to find. We'll shop around for you when we come back, and we'll find an inexpensive version of Windows 7. People should have that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny Jet, the jet guy.
Our travel guy,
travel guru, is here. Hi, Johnny.
How you doing?
Great to see you. So I asked Johnny before we got on here if he'd ever used WhatsApp. That's the $16 billion application Facebook just bought.
19.
Well, 19 could end up being as much as 19.
Right.
$12 billion in stock, $4 billion in cash, and another $3 billion in stock over the next few years, if all goes well. And you said, oh, yeah, this was something that he tried out early on.
Yeah, the CEO was a big traveler, and he posted it on Flyer Talk, which I mentioned before. It's the premier message boards for travelers, frequent travelers. So he went in there, and in 2009, he posted a thread saying that wow. he created this app. He thinks it's perfect for travelers. He wanted to know what people thought about it. Next thing you know, he's a billionaire.
Billionaire. He's worth almost $6 billion. The story on this is, in fact, the reason for WhatsApp success is its international adoption. It's not so huge in the exactly. U.S., but because it does, weird diacritical marks and Russian and Hebrew so well, left to right languages and everything, it really is good at all of that stuff. It's very popular around the world.
Right.
So it makes sense.
I'll send you the thread. You can actually.
That's cool. A bit of history.
I tweeted it a few days ago.
I have your Twitter. I'll just check it out at Johnny Jet.
That's right.
Yeah.
So last week we started talking about ski apps because the Olympics is going on, the Winter Olympics.
Yeah, you mentioned that lift ticket place.
I mentioned Liftopia, which is great to get your tickets. But this one is great. It's called Ski and Snow Report.
Hmm.
So this one has 2,000 global ski resorts around the world. And so it's anything you want to see, the trail maps. You can locate nearby ski areas via GPS. You can get the ski reports from different people. You can post photos. They have webcams on there and all the maps of the ski areas. It's a cool app, and I've been getting questions lately about where the people can ski. So this is what I tell people to download.
So is it on iPhone only?
It's on Android too.
Android and iPhone. Snee and Sko Report. Is that what you said?
Ski and Snow.
Snee and Sko and I don't ski, so I don't know anything about this stuff. Snee and Sko
Ski and Snow Report.
Yeah, from the Zumobi Network. That one?
Okay.
That one?
That's it. That's
all right.
It.
All right.
I feel like a Twilight Zone.
Snee and Sko Report. Got it. What else you got for us?
All right. Well, I wrote a few articles in the last week or so, and I really pissed off the airlines.
Uh-oh. What'd you tell us? You make them mad when you tell us secrets of getting good deals.
Well, one was, I don't know if I mentioned this, but one I wrote how Delta Airlines is pissing off passengers.
Why? What are they doing?
And I love Delta Airlines because, the way they treat their soldiers, and we talked about that. But they now give these flight attendants an incentive to talk about to push their credit card. And I have no problem pushing credit cards because all the travel bloggers make money using, pushing credit cards. But the problem is, they should just be doing it in the beginning when the welcome announcement.
Not
but now
throughout
they do
the
it,
entire trip.
Well, what they do now is they do it an hour or two before you land when everyone's sleeping. They just get on the horn and say,
I'd
hey,
like to do an advertisement now. Wake up! Wake up!
For 2 minutes. Oh, and I was like, are you kidding me? Oh. And so I wrote this report. I wrote this thing and – most people are like, agreed with me. They're like, yeah, I get woken up in the middle of the flight just for some credit card that I already have.
Well, so it's very annoying. I a lot of airlines are doing that now. They're wasting my time with their announcements. Keep the announcements to a minimum, right?
Well, just don't wake people up in the middle. Do it in the very beginning.
I paid money for this seat. I don't want to be bombarded with advertising.
Well, there are some airlines like Ryanair where you're going to have advertisements in front of on the seat back and on the luggage.
That doesn't wake me up though, so I don't mind that as much.
That's true. But anyway, so that's one story. The other one is that my niece was flying United this week and she was running late for the flight, so I said, "Hey, so what's your flight number?" and I'll look it up. So I looked it up and I realized that they give out so much information, and I don't know if it's good or bad. So if you go to united.com right now and type in any flight number, if you do flight 148, that's the one my niece was on. And I just did it now, and you can see, if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see an area where it says seat map, which I love because it shows you the live seat map, so you can see exactly what the inventory is.
Yeah.
But my one problem is if you hit the standby list, and then you can see the first three letters of the last name
what?
And the first initial of what? Anybody. So if you're a flight attendant trying to fly home secretly, or if you're a business class passenger or whatever,
they're leaking information.
Or if you're trying to run away from somebody, it's going to make it more difficult. And you can do this for any flight.
That's not good.
And then you can also see which seat they sat in. So if they got upgraded to first class or not. So anyway.
It's a stalker's dream come true. Now, it's only the people on standby, though, right?
Correct.
All right.
And also those who are waiting for first class upgrades.
Or upgrades. Okay.
So my niece said, well, why do you want to know what seat I'm in? Because she called me and said she made the flight. She goes, I'm in 19A. I go, it looks like 19B is available. And she goes, how did you know? And I go, because I know. I go, but don't get too happy because it looks like there's one person on standby. And I bet you they're a flight attendant, because usually they are. And they're probably going to sit there, and her first name's going to start with a K.
Wow, and Mr. Psychic.
My niece is like, you're crazy. 5 minutes later, she calls me back or texts me back. She goes, I can't believe it. You're right. How did you know that she was a flight attendant and her name started with a K?
You got to do more razzle dazzle if you're going to do that. I think I see a person sitting next to you. She's a flight attendant and her name begins with, I've seen the letter K. You know, the truth is, if you do know that information, tell them, get them mad. Maybe they'll change their policy.
Well, I mean, I like the information personally, but I just think it could be harmful for some people.
I agree. That's leaking information. This is the kind of thing privacy. We're very aware of privacy these days, and that's something they should be aware of. So United. Stop it.
And then my last thing that I wrote was how New York City taxi drivers are ripping off riders.
This has got to make them mad.
And some people, you know, stuck up for the taxi drivers. But anyway, every time you pay with a credit card, you know, that gives you the tip options. You can enter it manually, but, you know, your brain's usually not thinking, or at least mine isn't, and everyone's in a hurry, so they just usually you push the whatever tip button it is. But their only choices are either 20%, 25%, or
30%. Whoa!
I mean, come on.
Come on, man.
10, 15, or 20, or even
it
15,
starts
20,
at 20.
25.
20, 25. Who tips a cabbie 30%?
And it's not the individual taxi drivers. It's got to be the taxi commission.
Oh, yeah. Or the company,
maybe. I just think it's a total rip, man.
Well, I mean, I always over-tip cabbies, but...
Well, I always tip 20% if it's good service.
Yeah.
Well, at least I never give 25 or 30% unless,
30%, wow. You know, I just round up to the nearest bill. So if it's a $10 ride, I give them a 20, and then we're done.
Yeah,
that's
so
probably
anyway,
not the best way to do that.
Half the people agreed with me, half the people did not. So
well, go to johnnyjet.com and you can cast your vote. Are New York City cabbies ripping off riders? It's certainly good to be aware of, because you're right. You don't pay much attention to those buttons.
Well, I think that's the important part is that, you know what? Either pay cash or just punch in the manual now.
Leave a comment for Johnny, johnnyjet.com. Of course, he's at johnnyjet on Twitter, where you can follow him and get all sorts of tips. Look at his lists, too, on Twitter. Lots of good information there. And that's what Johnny says. He says, I'm going to use Uber next time.
And I got a deal that just came through. I always have L.A. deals. I don't know. I guess that's why I live in L.A., because they always have such great deals out of here. Anyway, L.A. to Anchorage again, this time for August, $256 round trip.
Oh, August in Alaska. There's nothing sweeter. Thank you, Johnny Jet. Leo Laborde, the tech guy. No, that's actually a popular time to go, right?
Oh, are you kidding me? That's
Is that round trip?
Yes, that's round trip.
You don't have to stay there?
It's round trip.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Always time to talk tech here. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, suggestion. We're going to get more, I think, lots of calls from people who say, I'm running Windows XP. What do I do? Some of them have older computers, but I realize a lot of you may have netbooks you bought just in the last few years, those netbooks, because they were so low power, often came with Windows XP. You especially should be annoyed. I guess you only paid $200 or $300 for it, but you know, that's a newer computer that's going to be obsolete at April 8th. So I really do think it's probably good if we can find an alternative. Now, Windows 7 will run on most XP computers if they have enough RAM, and I think you want 4 gigs of RAM. If you have 4 gigs of RAM, and Ben did, then you know, go to Newegg.com, get the OEM edition of Windows 7. It's under $100, and that should run pretty well. That should run pretty well. It's about how much memory you have. The other issue is sometimes the drivers and driver availability. But I think you're going to be okay. I think you're going to be okay. And I think Linux isn't a bad choice. There are small versions of Linux, Xubuntu, for instance, that are free. And if you just surf and do email, you might not find it too challenging. But Linux can often be challenging, especially if you're putting it on a computer that wasn't designed for Linux, so it doesn't have... You know, the hardware maybe isn't as compatible, things like that. I'd stick with Windows if you can. Nick is in Northridge, California, our next caller. Hi, Nick.
Hello?
Hey, welcome to the show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. I've been looking for lots of work lately, and, you know, I just recently got my Network Plus and CCNA.
Congratulations. And that's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, you helped last year when I called in. I asked about some other things, and you pointed me to some software, which is good. But now, you know, I've been looking quite a bit and having a little trouble, so I was thinking maybe I should start learning to code. And, I don't even know where to start.
So. Oh, man. Well, you know, I think you're not going to be alone when people see $19 billion for what is essentially a fairly easy-to-write application, WhatsApp. I think a lot of people are going to say, I should learn how to code. In fact, the original version of WhatsApp was written by a guy, a Russian, that they found online at a site called rentacoder.com.
Oh,
what? I doubt he's going to get much of the $19 billion, I'll be honest with you. So, you know, if you're having a hard time getting a job, you've got the certifications, which is great. You may have to relocate. Learning to code... You know, that's another year of your life spent. If you're a natural and you're really good at it, you can learn the basics of coding very quickly. But to become an adept coder, adept enough to get work, it's going to take you a year or two at least.
Yeah, you know, I figured that, you know, I might, if I put it on my free time. I mean, I enjoy doing technology a lot. I mean, I have my own home lab with, you know, actual equipment.
Look, I think a lot of people should learn to code because it's fun. It's a great hobby. Worst case, you'll have fun doing it. And nowadays, the ability to write, especially mobile apps, is prized. You may well be able to get a job quickly just knowing how to code. That's not what made WhatsApp rich, obviously. In fact, the code is the least of what they did. What made that app succeed is something that's very hard to bottle. It's almost a design and user interface thing. That's what makes one app better than another. There are lots of apps that do what WhatsApp does. Learning to code is a great idea. There are lots of ways to do it now. There's codeacademy.com, which is an online resource. It has very good classes. Udacity and some of the other, Coursera, some of the other MOOCs, massively online education sites, are very good for that, MOOC. I actually have a more kind of old-fashioned way to learn how to code, and it's completely free. There's a book that was written by MIT and Duke University for their beginning coders. And if you read the introduction, you'll see what the philosophy is behind it. They said, we often get high school students who studied programming in high school. When I say code, by the way, when we talk about code, we're talking about computer programming. And they have learned it so wrongly that we almost feel we can't teach them. We prefer to start with somebody who does not know how to write a program for a computer from scratch. So for our freshmen at MIT and Duke, and they for many years taught this course, unfortunately, I think they gave in to the pressures of pre-professional education and they started doing it in Java. But really, this is the way to learn. And you can download this book. It's a beautiful book, long, wonderful book, from HT htdp.org, how to design programs, htdp.org. And it is a brilliant book for learning how to program. Now, it will not get you ready for you know, getting a job in programming, but what it will do is give you such a good start in the fundamentals of programming that I think then it'll be very easy to learn languages in just a few weeks, and the code that you write will be more robust, more reliable, more correct. I really like this. It's kind of old-fashioned. It was written in 2001. As I said, MIT and Duke no longer use it because they teach Java now, and which I think is a huge mistake. But the nice thing is it's completely free. They use a coding language called Scheme, and you can download the programming language that they use for free on all platforms. I think this is a wonderful book, even if you don't want to be a professional. htdp.org. One of the fundamental ideas of this book is that a lot of people think computer programming is learning how to give the computer instructions so it does what you want. It's not what computer programming is about. Computer programming is about learning how to express a problem and a solution algorithmically. And it has nothing to do with computers. Now, I admit this is a very oddball point of view, but in fact, if you start from that point of view, you become a better programmer, I believe. So, and it's free, htdp.org. A smart high school kid could use it. Certainly anybody who's, Code Academy is great. There are lots of great ways to do it, but they kind of do everything backwards. They teach you how to program, how to give computers instructions. Sounds like that's what you should be learning, right? No. You want to learn how to express problems in an algorithmic language and how to solve them in an algorithmic language, regardless of the computer. Then you can get more specific once you understand that. But that's just me. I'm kind of an old-fashioned guy. Good luck. This is a challenge. I know it's hard to get a job nowadays in any field. But boy, if there's a field that's going to be better than others, I think it's computers, networks, support, IT, and yes, programming. It's a good thing to learn. Michael, Diamond Bar, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Leo. Thank you very much for the job you do and the information you give to all of us.
Oh, I love doing it. Thank you for letting me do it.
I would appreciate two things. I am now a senior citizen. I'm having trouble backing up. I'm looking for a good backup camera that isn't very expensive, possibly with radar.
Oh, I do not. For your car, you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah,
have,
that's
I don't
an interesting have thing. All the new cars, of course, have these built in,
and one that I could buy, and if you could do a show on it sometime, and then do they have a backup camera with a front camera also? I would appreciate it. The other thing I was going to ask you is, I bought my sister a tablet last year that was about $150. And can you play music through a tablet?
You can. Unfortunately, the $150 tablets tend to be Chinese knockoffs running.
They probably are.
Yeah, they're running Android. They're not super reliable. They may or may not have the capabilities of a more expensive Android or Apple tablet. But certainly, a Galaxy Tab and an iPad, all of these not only can play music, they can make music. They're very good at that, especially iPads. Is she a musician or she just wants to listen to music?
I just wanted to get the 1940s, 50s music from another state radio program.
Yeah. Then I would see if she can, if it has the App Store, the Google Play Store, look for an app called TuneIn Radio. It's a wonderful app. It'll play radio stations all over the world. And most radio stations are on it. There's, of course, the radio stations owned by Clear Channel use a different app that's also free called iHeartRadio. Should be available as well. And CBS radio networks also have their own app. Unfortunately, we're starting to see kind of this Tower of Babel with radio apps. But TuneIn Radio is excellent. And certainly, if you want old-time 40s and 50s music, you'll be able to get it. Running out of time. I will look for... I see backup cameras, but it's much more than that. You're probably going to want to go to a car installer to get it because you need a screen. You need a lot more than just the camera. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I should. I keep missing opportunities to plug Coding 101 and Know How, but I've tried not to be too. I'm sorry, Padre. I try not to be too too promotional on the show. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Ben was asking about a backup camera. And, you know, of course, the issue of putting a backup camera in after, you know, as a third party aftermarket thing is not only do you have to get the camera on the back, that's not so hard. A lot of companies make them. But then you have to get a screen in the front where the driver is. So he can see it. And that's perhaps a little more complicated. I would certainly recommend you go to an installer, car stereo installer of the like, to get one of these. But thanks to the chat room, they did recommend one from a company called Garmin. They make the Nuvi GPS devices. They also make a backup camera. And here's a cool thing. The backup camera wirelessly connects to one of their GPS devices, so you don't have to run a wire from the license plate in the back all the way up to the front. You can just wirelessly connect. I think that's a great idea. So if you search for Garmin, G-A-R-M-I-N, and backup camera, you'll find this. It's the BC20, $150 for the camera, and then, of course, you'll have to have a Garmin unit that supports it. And Garmin has a list of the units that do support it. In fact, there's a whole page on the Garmin site, which I will put in our show notes at techguylabs.com, which automotive GPS devices can add a backup camera. There's quite a few, it looks like. That's a good idea. I never thought of doing this after the fact. Most new cars do have them, and I tell you, I've had a backup camera for maybe 4 years or 5 years now, on my first on my Mustang, now on my Audi, and I tell you what, I can't get my head around anymore to look behind me. It's so dangerous for me to back up without a backup camera. When I rent a car, I miss it. Does your new car have a backup camera? No, probably not.
No. I'm old school. It's good for your neck.
My car beeps at you if you get within a foot of anything. It goes beep, 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 beep. And then you got lines and you can see what you look like from the top down. Because it's got cameras. Okay, so it's got cameras in both the side mirrors, a camera in the front, camera in the back, and then somehow the computer puts it all together to give you a bird's eye view of your car. You could drive the car from the cameras. You could put a black sheet over the windshield and still drive the car.
I thought it had a drone following you around.
How does it know?
Top-down thing.
You see the image of the car, and it's great if you've got a tight parking space. You can see exactly where you are, and then the beepers. Yeah.
That would have been helpful last week.
It's hard sometimes. Well, this is a fairly, you know, a big car anyway, and so it's hard to navigate. It's like driving a boat. So you really do need the top-down look.
Help.
But I'm notorious for scraping the right side, the passenger side of the car.
Aww.
On all sorts of stuff. My old car was all scraped up on the right because I couldn't really tell where I was in space.
Guy.
I'm that guy. I'm backing out. I swing the wheel around, rip a hole in the car next to me. But you know, in San Francisco parking lots this space is such a premium that the parking spots in San Francisco are so, not just the street ones, but like in the parking garages, and then they have the cement pillars right there. I'd hit one every time.
That's what always cracks me up, seeing those parking garages with the cement pillars, and there's all these scratches on it, and I'm like, who runs into the pillar?
Me!
Well, it's the guy in the truck that came on down from Petaluma.
Me! Not anymore. Not anymore. I see the pillar, I just look at the camera and steer. John's next. I'm sorry, Josh is next in Irvine, California. Hello, Josh. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, how you doing, Leo?
I'm good, Josh. How are you?
Pretty good. I listen to your show a lot. You're really interesting to listen to.
Well, thank you, even if I'm a bad driver.
Even if you're a bad driver.
Yeah.
Well, hey, over the new year, I got a Galaxy S4, and let me tell you, I love it, but there's one thing about it that bugs the crud out of me.
The fact that they're announcing the Galaxy S5 on Monday?
No, I don't think that'll bug me too much.
Oh, good, all right.
still so great. The one thing that bugs me is on my lock screen, this Samsung Music widget keeps showing up, and I do not know how to get rid of it. My task manager exit out of it. I force stop it, and no matter what, it keeps popping back up.
Now, do you use it anyway?
I work out, but right. That's it.
So, unfortunately, this is actually not unusual with all kinds of phones. There's a default music player. And for instance, on my Motorola X, I'll get in the car, it'll hook up to the Bluetooth, and I've been listening to a book, but for some reason, it doesn't want to play that. It wants to play this stupid song that I have in my music player, and it opens that and starts running that. And so that's part of the problem, is that the default music player is that Samsung Music app. You can change what's in your lock screen, I believe. If you look in the settings, and I know there's 18 pages of settings on that Galaxy S4, but I think it's in the display settings, I believe. You can change what's in your lock screen. I think you can not have the music player show up in your lock screen. But that doesn't mean the music player won't launch, because it will. Is it launching because you get in Bluetooth range, or it just launches by itself? Or
just launches for no reason, and there's no settings in the actual Samsung Music app. Like, there's none
at
all.
Yeah, no, I think it's in the operating system. But now, you can't, unfortunately, uninstall the music app. And this is one of the reasons I really don't like the Galaxy S4, is all the stuff Samsung has put on there that you can't get rid of. So you can't replace it, you know, if you get Double Twist or some other better music playing app. The Samsung app's always going to be there. And it may even be impossible to make it not be the default app. I don't know in this case. So one thing you might try, sometimes the problem is you use it. I mean, if you could disable it in the apps menu. You could disable any app, and that kind of hides it. But the problem is you do want it. You want to use it.
I've disabled it, and it keeps popping back up.
It still comes back even when you disable it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Samsung. I think that you could get it out of your lock screen. Not having it launch is another matter entirely. I don't know why it keeps launching. That's a good question. It's frankly, one of the reasons I stopped using the Galaxy S4 was there was too much Samsung interference. This is, I would categorize this as a Samsung interference, right? Kit Callen in our chat room says on his S4, he freezes it. Now, I think you have to root it to do that. So, I don't know. That's an interesting problem.
It's something that I think happens a lot, because I've looked at a lot of forums. And
Samsung wants you to see their stuff.
Well, and I took it into AT&T, and they don't know how to get rid of it either.
Yeah. I'm looking at the chat room. They're pretty good at this kind of hacking, and nobody's come up with anything. You can get it out of the lock screen, I'm sure of that, because I didn't have it in my lock screen. But if it...
I'm looking at the lock screen widgets right now, and it's not in there.
It's not in there? Oh, yay. I don't have an S4 right in front of me, so I can't play with it. Just keep listening, Josh, and I'll keep looking at the chat room. Maybe they'll come up with a solution. Apparently, Samsung understands the pain we're feeling. I tell you, I feel fortunate that I get to try a lot of phones. I bought an S4. And I gave it up because of all the stuff Samsung put on it. A couple of things have happened, though, since then. Samsung is a Korean company. The Korean government passed a law, this is how bad it is, that requires Samsung and other smartphone manufacturers to allow you to uninstall the junk they put on the phone. Hey, that's nice. That's really nice. And then Samsung made a deal with Google. When Google sold Motorola, it was right around the same time. And I'm thinking, what Google did is they bought Motorola. They started competing with Samsung and others. Samsung was so afraid that the mothership, Google, which makes and owns Android, might outcompete them in the marketplace, that I think Google was able to make a deal saying, hey, Samsung, we'll sell Motorola. We'll stop making handsets. But you've got to do us a favor and make a pure or closer to pure Google Experience phone. And I think that's what we're going to see with the S5. We'll talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Any ideas about disabling that music app? Oh. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. The chat room says they've also experienced the Samsung Galaxy S4 issue with the music player, the Samsung music player launching at random times and always wanted to take over the thing. And Callan says, you know, all he could do was root it, install Titanium Backup, and then freeze the app to get rid of it. Frustrating, isn't it? It's one of the reasons I did not like and do not use the Galaxy S4. Now, Samsung sells a Google Play Edition version of that phone that is just pure Android on the Google Play Store. HTC sells one of its ones. But all of that is moot because the Mobile World Congress is coming up this week in Barcelona. And that's when all the new phones come out, including Monday morning, West Coast time anyway. It'll be in the evening in Barcelona. Samsung's going to announce its new Galaxy S5. And we're going to watch with interest to see how much junk Samsung puts on this thing. Abstruse says, disable the app and turn off notifications and it will stop auto-launching. And he's given us a link to the Galaxy S4 forum, so I'll put that link in the show notes. Maybe that'll help you get rid of your music player. It's exactly the problem you were having. So there is a solution in this thread on the Galaxy S4 forums. S4forums.net is the website. But we'll put everything in our website, techguylabs.com. So good. Maybe help is on the way. John in Orange County is next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hi, Leo. I want to say thanks for all your help. I listen to your show quite often when I work on the weekends, and you do a great job.
Thank you.
I have a question. I have a field service business, mobile technicians that are out in the field. We're going all digital. Couldn't afford to really buy iPads for everybody, and because of the type of business, I'm afraid they'll break them. So I did find that the Zoom, the Motorola Zoom, which is many years old and really cheap to buy on eBay right now, works great. But I need some security software, something that's going to protect that Zoom besides the average screen lock that's on there. Because if these guys lose it, everything that I'm doing is cloud-based, so I'm not too concerned with people getting into the cloud-based program. But I'd like to protect the Zoom, the investment that I have, plus, you know, just kind of keep people from wanting to steal them.
Yeah. So what version of Android do you have on it right now? Have you been able to upgrade it at all? Or?
Yeah, all the ones that I'm buying on the eBay sites, they're all up to date with the Jelly Bean or the KitKat, whatever is the most current one. They're all Verizon's. So they're really great, and they work really good with the software cloud-based that I found on the internet.
That's nice. Somebody's obviously updating these because they shipped with Android Honeycomb, which was version 3.0. So if you've got 4.0 or later, there are, you'll notice in the security, there's a number of ways to lock it. The most secure one is with a password or PIN number. I always do the pattern because it's fast and easy, but it is not the most secure. However, if you use a password or PIN code and then turn on encryption in the settings, which you can do, that thing is locked down. Unless somebody guesses the password or PIN, you can even, I believe, set it to only allow 10 tries. So I think that's pretty – when you say security, you mean you don't want anybody to be able to use it if your employee loses it.
Correct. And what I've decided to do, I tried Lookout, and that works really good for wiping the device and locating
it. Yeah, so that's the next additional thing is that if you've lost it, you can then use Lookout to wipe it.
Now, would you use Lookout over, let's say, Google's app that allows you to locate, wipe it?
No, in fact, Lookout, I think, made a lot of hay, and you have to pay for this feature on Lookout. It's not free. Went because they were the first to do it. But now that it's built into Android, if your version of Android is late enough to use the Google service, I would just use the Google service. But the key is to put in a strong PIN. It should be 5 digits or more, and then encrypt the contents of the phone. Once you do that, you can people will not be able to get the contents of that phone at all, or tablet, I should say, at all. So the Lookout will just then be a little extra insurance, or the Android will be extra insurance.
Ah, very good.
Yeah. I think that just the built-in operating system utilities are good enough that probably that's all you need. You don't need to pay extra for Lookout. I do use Lookout, and I recommend it. It's nice because it's like a second set of eyes. The Android scans software before you, when you install it, but then Lookout does it as well, and I think it's not bad to have that.
So I do put Lookout on all my stuff.
We'll give it a try. Thanks,
all right, Leo. John, you got a good deal. I mean, if you found somewhere that you can get Zooms and they're updated, that's pretty good. XOOM, early Android tablet from Motorola. Let's say hi to... actually, it's Naomi in Denver, and then we'll get to you, Brett. Hi, Naomi.
Hi, Leo. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Help me.
Oh, no. What's going on?
I'm trying to fix a computer for a friend. I'm using that Fix-It stuff that you gave me. Thank you. Thank you again.
You're welcome.
And...
Little hardware toolkit from iFixit.com, we should mention.
Yeah. And we had Windows 7 on it before.
Okay.
And it just kind of went blank. So I ran SpinRite both 4 and option 2.
You have a kit to... you're ready to take on the world, Naomi. SpinRite and your iFixit toolkit.
This summer, they lost everything. Oh, and I'm fixing some stuff.
That's nice of you. That's nice of you.
With your help. Anyway, so I got 2 and 4, option 2 and 4 on SpinRite going, and that went fine.
Okay.
It came up and it said, do you want to start Windows? And I said, yes. So it says, do you want to repair Windows? And I said,
well,
yes. And so I repaired it, and it went back down and came back.
Hang on. We got to take a break, Naomi. Take a breath. We're going to come back and talk to you right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah. Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom, not a law firm. No, no, LegalZoom's better. They provide self-help services at your specific direction to get the job done. If you're a small business just getting started, you got to have the protection of an LLC or a Chapter S or C corporation. You should have trademarks on your precious intellectual property, maybe even patents too. But you might think, I can't afford an attorney. Ah, but you can. You can afford LegalZoom. LegalZoom, this is what I used to incorporate this company in 2005. It's still the operating agreement we use of the LLC. It's so good. It was $99 plus state filing fees. Trademarks, $169 plus filing fees. LegalZoom, over 1 million entrepreneurs like me have done exactly that. 90% of them recommend LegalZoom to family and friends. That's how good it is. And for family law, too, you can create a will for just $69, a living trust, your durable power medical attorney. All of this is here. There are no surprise fees, no hassles, no headaches. LegalZoom.com. Not a law firm, but they can connect you with a third-party attorney. I love this in their legal plan. So you can get advice from an attorney registered in your state. Pick the attorney based on their profile, but also unedited customer reviews. From wills to business formations, trademarks, power of attorney, and more, LegalZoom.com. I want you to use our offer code TechGuy, and you'll get $10 off at checkout, and they'll know, hey, they heard it on the Tech Guy show. You'll help support us. That's LegalZoom.com. Discount $10 when you use our offer code TechGuy. Really a great service. I mean, almost all of our advertisers I use or have used, and LegalZoom really, they help me become an entrepreneur. I love them. So 11:30 p.m. Pacific, these are all Pacific time. Tomorrow is our Nokia X announcement. And then at Monday, 10 a.m., actually, TNT's at 10 a.m. I guess 11 a.m. is the Samsung Unpacked coverage. But we'll be covering it all day, probably. So tune in. We were talking to Naomi, what do you call yourself? The tech chick? Tech girl? The geek?
Well, you see me in Clementine.
She is helping a friend. This is nice of you. Fix her computer. The hard drive was unresponsive. Was it just not booting up, or?
Well, it would boot up and then just immediately go down. So I ran SpinRite.
Okay,
know,
yeah. So there's a couple of reasons a computer or a hard drive might cause problems. SpinRite can only fix
the lowest level problems. So what SpinRite does is it looks at the drive, and this is from my friend Steve Gibson, we're giving him a plug, grc.com. It looks at the low level sectors. It tries to read every sector on the drive. If it can, it will and if it has a hard time, it will copy the data off, move it, and then mark that sector unusable. But that only fixes low level damaged sectors. There's lots of other things.
For a week.
Say again?
I ran SpinRite for over a week.
Yeah, because if it's having a hard time reading a sector, it keeps reading it. So it could take an hour or two or maybe more to read one bad sector.
Windows came up, and then it said, do you want to fix it? Yes, I want to fix it. And then it came up, and there was two windows. It says, which one do you want? I'm going, what? So I picked one, and then it went down, came back up, and there were three windows. What is it doing in there? A rabbit thing?
That's not good. That's definitely not good. It's reproducing. That's very interesting. Have you tried it a fourth time?
I was afraid to.
I don't blame you. It's multiplying.
I don't know.
You didn't give it water after midnight, did you?
What?
No, I'm just kidding. Boy, I don't know what's going on there. It's obviously the drive is still messed up. What I would do right now is get the drive mounted on another computer and get the data off of it. Because it's not such a big deal to erase the drive and install Windows again, start her over from scratch. But what you don't want to do, of course, is erase her data. That's what you're really trying to get.
Correct.
Sounds like, my guess would be, that data is going to be accessible at this point. So don't keep trying to boot from that drive. You can either pull it out and put it into another, is it a laptop or is it a desktop?
It's a desktop.
You can pull it out and put it in another desktop. Or boot another operating system on the CD or something, but what you need to do is copy the data off of that drive. You know, any tech person, in addition to your iFixit kit, you should probably go to newertech.com. They have a USB drive kit that will take any drive and turn it into a USB drive, temporarily only, because there's no case, it's just a connector. But what's nice about that is you can then take that drive out of the tower, put this little adapter on it, plug it into your laptop or another computer, look at the drive, get the files off of it. Then what I would do is wipe the drive and reinstall Windows.
Yeah, the problem is I don't have a Windows 7.
Ah.
And she upgraded from a Vista to a Windows 7.
And I wonder if she did it with a legitimate copy or...
Yes, she did.
She didn't get a disk, though?
Yeah, she got an upgrade.
Oh, that's fine.
Windows 7.
That's fine. That's okay.
Windows 7 on?
Yeah. So once you get the data off, take that upgrade disk, put it in, run it. It will check. It'll say, okay, yeah, I see you have an earlier version of Windows on there. And then run in the options. You can erase, you know, reformat the drive, which you should do. Start from scratch, repartition, reformat, and install Windows 7 on top of it.
Okay. I'm getting ready for Windows 8 because, you know what? I went in there to my desktop, and I started touching the screen and wondering why it wasn't getting any response.
You get used to touch, don't you? Once you get used to it, it is kind of hard to go back. I agree with you.
I got a Nexus 7. What makes it so addicted to the power cord? I can't get it for more than 2 hours.
Oh, well, you must have some software that's depleting the battery. The 7 should go longer than 2 hours for sure. Mm. So, but anyway, this is a... probably an indicator that the drive itself doesn't have long for this world, so you might even want to get a new drive to replace this one. But I have one way to recover it. If you've run SpinRite and it survived, and it sounds like it might be operating okay, except there's a few little munged up files, that's probably a side effect of the failing drive. I would format it, and if it works okay, maybe you're all right. But, you know, new drives are cheap. Get a new drive. I think that'd be a good idea. And there are ways to upgrade even if you don't have Windows installed. They understand that in some cases you're going to upgrade without having the original, you know, Windows Vista on there. You are a nice neighbor. This is what tech people ought to do. Help each other out. Help non-technical people out. 8888-ASK, Leo. Let's go to Brett now in Woodbridge, New Jersey. Sorry, Brett. I meant to go to you next.
Boy, you're a busy guy. I just have two updates and one question. The first question I have is about Google Chromecast.
Love it.
I like Google Chromecast, but I like to see more apps on the tablet. And when I called Google, they said they opened up the Airway
You got somebody at Google? You actually called them and somebody answered?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so the Chromecast is a $35 device. It's with an HDMI port. You plug it into the back of your TV as if it's another Blu-ray player or something. You hook it up to the Wi-Fi, and then it can play stuff. Now, unfortunately, when it first came out, the stuff it could play was limited. Netflix, YouTube, they've added a few other things. But you're right, Google's right, when they told you, we've opened it up now. Expect a flood of apps, and I would say in 6 months, almost every app that comes out should support Chromecast. It'll have a little button on it that says, you know, play this video or this audio to your Chromecast. You'll select the Chromecast. I have four in my house. I see den, I see gym, I see kitchen, I see living room. I love the Chromecast. At $35, I put one on every single TV. So you will be able to get more apps on it. I agree, right now it's a little limited, but Google has been very careful to only allow a few apps out, but now we're going to start to see a whole lot more.
I got two updates for you.
Sure.
From the last week about the WDDRK, that they don't support my WNR 2000 version 1. They only support version 2 and 3, but I did something to the router where I changed the MTU from 1500 to 1400, and it works pretty good.
Did that speed it up?
Yeah.
Wow.
And also, because I'm going to win a Geek Award, but on my Dell laptop that came with Windows 8, which I don't like Windows 8, Dell told me that you cannot install Windows X, I mean, a 7 on there. And sure enough, I did research. I did something in the BIOS, and I got Windows 7 Professional. And it runs a lot faster than Windows 8. And also, also on my desktop, I also just installed the Precise Puppy Linux and Windows 7, so I have a choice, and there's nothing that challenges me because I
I'm going to stamp geek on your forehead. You get the Geek Award of the Week, Brett. You are amazing.
I even helped my friend out in Pennsylvania, and my neighbor. I help out time to time, and when I told him something about that, there's a way to make Windows 7 programs open up faster. I explained to him, and the first thing he says to me is, "How do you know all this?" And I said, "Well, because it's knowledge, and it's my hobby, and it's..."
And because you listen to Leo, tell him the truth.
Yeah, Leo's a good man.
Hey, Brett, that's wonderful news. I'm really thrilled to hear that you figured all that out. Very impressive. You are a mighty geek. We should get... Had there something printed up, you know, the Geek Award. People like Brett. They deserve a little gold star. And actually, our previous caller, too, she deserves a gold star because she's helping her friends out with her hard drive. The Mighty Geeks. Lee and Big Bear. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello there, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Lee?
Good. I have a question with regard to Windows 7, an image resizer like I used to have in Windows XP.
Yeah.
A right-click.
Irfan View.
Yeah.
Irfan View. You know that one? IrfanView. Once you install that, you can add it to your right-click menu. Does a great job resizing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. It's time for our gadget guru, Dick DiBartolo.
Yeah, exactly.
Beep-beep-beep-beep-beep. Dick DiBartolo, the Gizwiz, Mad Magazine's maddest writer for many a moon. He now is a regular on this show and has been for many a moon, talking about gadgets. Yeah. And when did we start work? We started working together at Tech TV. Probably almost 15 years ago.
Oh, yes, forever. Yeah, and I was like the third show on Twit.
Yeah.
A long time.
He's done more than 1,200, actually more than 1,400 episodes.
No, yeah, well, I think we're up to 1,457 this coming week.
Wow. Meanwhile, he's still living in Gizneyland, his jam-packed apartment in the Isle of Manhattan. Even more crowded because Myra Joyce sleeps there now.
Exactly.
She is Myra there right now?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's taking in some boarders because she needs the cash.
There's lots of room under the desk.
So what do you got for us this week?
You know, I have a fun, you know, Toy Fair just closed on Thursday, and Toy Fair is always a fun event to go to. And I think one of my favorite things at Toy Fair is from Wowie. Now, you and I know Wowie from way back. Oh, they've done bizarre things like the Elvis head that sang like 10 of his songs and moving around. But they have a neat little thing out called MIP, M-I-P, or the Mobile Inverted Pendulum.
What?
It's a little guy, I'd say probably 6 or 7 inches high. And the top half is like a little robot body, and the bottom is like a Segway. So this little guy can run around. He comes with a tray. You can slide the tray on him and then put like a full bottle of Coca-Cola on his tray. And he can run around and he balances like a Segway would. You can, and he's gesture operated.
Do you have one in there? Do you have one?
You know what? I don't, Leo. It's coming out. There's some video on my website. It's coming out not until June, but they let me play with it at Toy Fair. And you can chase him, and he recognizes your hand, so you can try and stop him. As soon as he sees your hand, he will do a 360 and run the other way.
Is cool.
This
has to be thousands of dollars.
Leo, it's going to be $99.
What?
It's going to be $99. It's going to be Best Buy only for the first 3 months, like June, July, and August.
This is going to be Best Buy. Huge.
It's going to be great. The little guy, his wheel is actually, when he's not running, you turn one of his wheels, and that dials in the 6 different games that he can do. He has a built-in speaker, so if you play music through it, he'll dance to your music.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really...
I have this double robotics thing that holds an iPad and walks around. It was $2,500.
Oh, but that's... Your guy is like 6 feet
he's taller,
right?
But it's the same technology. It's the balancing, two-wheel balancing. And golly, $99. Like, what will they think of next? And you control it with an iPhone?
You control with an iPhone if you want to. It can play games on its own. What you can do with your iPhone is you can draw a route on the iPhone, and then he will, on the table, do that route.
That's crazy.
The other neat thing is he can remember gestures. Like at the show, I had an ABC cameraman there, and the guy said, I'll have him run to the end of the table, turn around, and walk toward the camera. So he sits the little robot down, and he goes... He moves his hand in all these different directions. Then he claps his hand twice, and the MIP goes and does all the gestures that he told it to. And I said, how many gestures can he remember? He said, at one time, 100.
Wow.
He said, you could have this guy run from here to the end of Toy Fair, and he would do that.
This is The Ibo, the Sony dog that was kind of robotic.
Oh, yes, yes. He was $1,500.
$1,500. Yes, this does more than Ibo. I'm blown away, frankly.
Yeah. Now, you can pre-order it on Wowie, but it's going to be $119.95 to pre-order it. So if you can wait, it's going to be $99.99 at Best Buy. And, there's Ibo.
It's pretty impressive that they're able to get it into a $99 robot that much
technology.
Intelligence.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah,
wow.
Exactly.
Cool. If you go to gizwiz.biz, Dick has a link to, what is it called? The MIP, M-I-P from Wowie.
Yeah, the MIP. Wowie's MIP.
You get a link to that and more information in the videos we've been talking about and so forth. You're also going to get a chance to play the What the Heck Is It contest. That's a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, autographed by Mad's maddest writer himself. All you have to do is take a look at a picture of a gadget or an item and figure out what it is from the close-up picture. This is a tough one. I don't. This just looks like a piece of plastic to me, but I'm sure it does something.
Could be a MIP repair kit. Who knows?
Gizwiz.biz is his website. And Dick, stick around. The GizFizz is coming up. And of course, each and every Monday. What day of the week? Friday? When do you do the GizWiz now?
Wednesday? We do it on Wednesday.
Every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Wednesday. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. Yep. Dick has a great gadget show with our mutual friend, Chad Johnson. That's on the Twit Network, twit.tv. Thank you, Dickie D.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I'm gonna take a chance here so we can get one more call in before we wrap things up. Michelle is in Los Angeles. Hi, Michelle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for squeezing me in there.
All right.
Okay, so a couple of years ago, you recommended the Galaxy, the Samsung Nexus to me, and yeah. I'm ready for a new phone.
Did you like the Nexus?
Yeah, I did. I mean, it's got little things I don't like about it, but, you know, every phone's like that. And so
no phone is perfect. Yeah, I agree. Have you ever used an iPhone, Michelle, or you want to stick with Android?
I think I want to stick with Android, and I'm thinking about the Note because I love the idea of that big screen. I do a lot of browsing.
I love the Note 3. It is a huge screen. But yeah. What I don't like, and it's true of all the Samsung phones now, the Galaxy S4, and it's that whole family, the Note, is they put so much Samsung stuff on there. It's a little junked up, in my opinion, and you can't get rid of it. So for the size, I think that's a great phone. And there are other big screen phones, 5 inches and plus, out there. But I think the Note, because the style, do you think you would use a stylus? It's the only one with a stylus, and I really like that.
I always use a stylus anyway.
Ah, well, then that might be the choice for you. You may not be bothered by the Samsung stuff. Go to a store, an ATT, whoever your carrier is, store, and play with it and see if you can live with this stuff. The camera and so forth has a lot of extra.
What kind of, you mean it just pops up when you don't want it to?
Well, some of it is that, yes. In fact, you heard maybe a little earlier, a caller with a Galaxy S4, the Samsung Music Player just launches randomly. We don't like that, and you can't get rid of it. The camera has all these modes, including a golf swing mode. Now, I know you're a Highlander, so you probably play golf.
Oh, yes, all the time.
Yeah. So maybe the golf swing mode for the camera is a good thing for you. But even if you play golf, how many times do you want to take a picture of your swing? The problem is you can't get rid of that, and it takes up space. So, but I would look at the Note 3. It is a nice phone. There's certainly nothing wrong with it except for that. The hardware is superlative. And I don't know of anything with a stylus in that size screen. So give it a try and see if you can live with it. Michelle, thanks. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.